Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
One of the most dangerous things that society can do is to place a loaded weapon of any kind in the hands of an immature mind. The reasonable expectation for parents is to nurture and guide their children in the path of responsibility as citizens of the world and their communities and their neighborhoods. Far too many chronologically grown individuals we see now who were once children are walking around with both the mentality of a child and access to weapons of many types, many forms. Now, because they lack understanding, despite being chronologically grown, they don't know how to have a point of reference other than the impulsive drive that they have, what comes to their mind and acting on, responding immediately. So join me tonight as we explain to some extent why so many people we find are volatile, right, such that they don't know who or what to fear, right, and really don't realize that the person they should fear most is their own selves because of their volatility. Our topic tonight is, in whom should I fear? In whom should I fear? You listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for each and every one of you who will join us tonight. We have a brief show, about an hour and a half. We got about another hour and 20 minutes or so. Join us, 657-383-0944. 657-383-0944. Now, tonight we do have a topic. Thus, we are providing some context for that via a monologue. However, we endeavor to keep that short and open up our phone lines to our listening audience, 657-383-0944. That is the number to call in the studio. If you're following us live on Facebook, we encourage you to both give us a call and or post your questions and comments in the group thread there. And we'll be happy to read the question out, not necessarily identifying you by name or person, but read the question out and share it in the context of our dialogue tonight, okay? Having said that, again, our topic is, in whom should I fear? I would argue, and I submit to you, that that's a question that many young people who have this pseudo or fake confidence has today. Somehow they feel as though they don't have to be afraid of anything. And what we're going to hope to discover tonight is how they get there. As you know, that's not healthy, right? Y'all know that, right? Okay. All right. August 3rd. Whew. Wow, here we go. 8th month of the year. August 3rd, 2021. Proverbs, the 9th chapter, verses 8 through 10, offers some perspective here in response to this question, in whom should I fear? All right? And I would argue, and I submit to you again, that because there are so many, not just young children, but there's some people that are of a chronological age where you would expect they would know better. They're victims of this as well. Okay? This mentality. Listen to what the text in Proverbs, the 9th chapter, verse 8 to 10 says. Verse 8 says, "Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning." Verse 10 says, "The fear of the Yehovah, of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy is understanding." Let me repeat that last verse one more time. It speaks to the question, in whom should I fear? The fear of the Yehovah, the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. The knowledge of the Holy is understanding. Beloved, I don't care how big, how bad you might think you are. There is something that can be like Superman's kryptonite and bring you down. Huh? Now the question is, where should you place your fear? Should you have fear? Yes, yes, yes. Fear is normal. There is a place for it. But at the same time, understanding the nature of fear, you are able to manage it so such that it doesn't control you. You understand? The text tells us that when you have a reverence, that's what we mean by fear, for the Almighty, the creator of the universe, that he who created you and caused you to be, to move and have being, by having a healthy reverence, and that's what we mean by fear, that is the first step to being wise and opening yourself to learning, to growing, to developing. You see? Now, what I want to do is I want to talk about three concepts here. Concept of bravado, right, that you see in the street. The nature of volatility and fear. And we'll open up our phone line, 657-383-0944. We got about another hour and 20 minutes or so here. Okay? Give us a call. Give us a call. So let's first talk about this street bravado. You've seen it. Perhaps you've looked at our promo here, the image of a young man brandishing a weapon close to his chest. And I can speak from personal experience growing up in the urban area and to the fact that a gun, a weapon, offers a very false sense of security. For many, when you consider the likelihood that young people are getting so many guns off the street because there are holes in the distribution industry of firearms, and I'm specifically talking about people who sell them and who ship them, right? Let me just go and break it down to you. Talk straight to you. Here's how to get them. Here's how to let y'all to get brand new high power weapons on the street. Somehow, mysteriously, they're on trains or in cargo that these young folk know where to find and how to get to them. They jump on their cargo. They break in it. And you know what happens next. Guns are gone. Well, why didn't somebody, whoever sent those on the cargo, what security did they have? What kind of detail that they have to protect that, to make sure they didn't get out there? You might ask yourself, what are they really trying to do? The reality is, oftentimes, they're going to get paid from any insurance they have on that. That's the reality, right? And they'll be covered and protected from liability for them getting out there because they're insured. Then they'll have funds to go back and replenish them again. But what's the one problem? The babies got guns on the street. And in their mind, there's no reason to fear. There's no reason to fear anything or anybody. In fact, they demonstrate this bravado or this bold attitude, boldness, and they display it so that they can convince others that they're not to be dealt with. They're forced to be reckoned. This false bravado is a pretense, though, for courage on the inside and self-confidence. Take the gun and take the streets from which they stand, and you'll find nothing but scared, fearful individuals. Some of them are not 5, 6, 10, even 15 or 16. Some of them are in their 20s and 30s of this mindset. The street bravado that you see. It's interesting how the clothes, certain uniform or get-up, urban gear, you understand, is what we wear, and people have come to become afraid when they see people dressed in a certain way with a certain swag, looking and appearing in the same manner. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Well, the problem is young cats are literally streaking fear in entire neighborhoods and communities. And there are everyday folk that work hard and trying to live a normal life, raise their family, and wondering, my goodness, seems like not even law enforcement, the police can do it, elected officials can do anything with them. Because they're terror. Well, the first step is the understanding that there's something that they must come to understand to fear. And as parents, as caregivers, as stakeholders, there's some things we can do as we embrace them to help them to change their behavior. First, you got to understand why it's there, though. You need to understand what's going on. They ain't bad. They're clutching a gun, really, because they're scared. You understand? And this unchecked that continues over time, every time they're looking over their shoulder and wondering what's coming next, right, it turns into volatility. And one minute, they're just standing there and they ain't bothering nobody. They ain't doing nothing. And then the next, you see a sudden change, a rapid change that is unpredictable. And in the end, there's mayhem, there's death, there's destruction. Where is it coming from? You sleep at night in your neighborhood, on your block, you and your family, and all of a sudden you get a drive-by. You understand? You get a drive-by. And it lit up your house, man. Good God. What is going on? All of a sudden, what has brought that on? That's that volatility, excuse me, that I was telling you about. Rapid action and what happened. Part of it is to prove that they're big, bad, and that we can hold our own. Sad part about it is brothers are killing one another, trying to prove some kind of point. And the reality is, again, if you take away from them the one thing that gives them the confidence that they don't have to fear anybody, you got a scared thin veneer of a person there. That takes me to the last thing about fear. Let's talk about what this fear is, because really what brings the volatility, what brings the expressions of bravado is the fear. Take all that away. Chip that away. And when you get down to the bottom of it, guess what you're going to find? Let me tell you what you're going to find. You're going to find someone who is subject to the universal triggers. Anxiety. Right? Fear. What are they scared of? They're scared that I might get on. Right? And a lot of times, this is more imagined than it is real. It's perceived than real. I can tell you from experience growing up, you know, you kind of have to look out to make sure you don't get nobody snooze you. You understand what I'm saying? And oftentimes, it's not that anyone is bothering you. It is that you've seen so much destruction, so many problems, that you say, I want to make sure I want to be on guard. Is that a reasonable concern? Absolutely. However, when you allow that thing to get out of control, it can become unreasonable, right? We're talking about this fear and this threat that there may be some physical harm, there may be emotional harm, psychological too, or harm to your overall well-being, right? You grow up every day and you go and you're not sure what you're going to eat, if your light's going to be on, if you're going to be all right, if you're not going to be all right. Especially for a young man, that can be very taxing and psychologically burdensome. You understand what I'm saying? So there's a reason, and it's understandable that people who are in a tough situation, in a dire strait, can be concerned about what tomorrow is going to hold. Right? They have to prove to themselves some things. They have to convince themselves that I can make it, doggone it. I don't care what's going on. So let's look at, for a second, a few things about fear. As I was alluding to, fear can be helpful. In fact, the text tells us in the 8th verse of the 9th chapter of Proverbs that when you began to fear Elohim, Jehovah God, the Lord God, that's the beginning of being wise. What do we mean by fear there? We mean showing reverence and recognition that you didn't bring yourself here. And that but for the Creator, you wouldn't exist. That's a healthy fear. Sometimes fear comes in different forms or different expressions, right? Different reasons for it. So we can't never say that any one person is unreasonable in their fear. Because what you see as a threat or not a threat may be very different for someone else. You understand what I'm saying? So, again, placing yourself in the shoes of a young cat on the street with their pistols and what have you, and their bravado, what's on their mind? It helps to understand what's on their mind. Consider that fear is not as automatic as you think. There are some times where you think you ought to be afraid. You see a dog, and the dog is barking. All looks are not light, and all dogs don't bite, even if they're barking. If you understand the psychology of dogs, right, you'll watch their tail, you'll watch their ears, you'll watch their body language, and you can tell that sometimes they're afraid or that they're just infirm themselves. You understand what I'm saying? All right? You don't need to be in danger necessarily to be scared or be fearful. Again, oftentimes it's only a perceived threat or danger, not that it's real. All right? The more scared you feel, though, the more intimidating your environment becomes around you. And it feels like, in some ways, that the walls are closing in on you. Things are getting shorter and shorter for you. You understand what I'm saying? And this causes you to feel like you got to move, you got to act immediately. And first person to come, watch it. Well, why are you acting like that? I'm scared, man. I'm scared. I don't know. I didn't know who. Don't run up on me like that. Don't run up on me like that. I think you get the picture. And guess what? When you're in that type of situation, or you're that volatile, fear dictates what happens next. It could cause you to react in a way that triggers a certain reaction from somebody else. One of the problems that we have right now, especially with what happened over this past summer, is there is a feeling, a notion that anything goes now, that there is a breakdown in law and order, and that society now is at the whims of criminals, basically, such that everybody got to go and protect themselves. This calls for little communication, little dialogue, diminished trust, and it's easy for people to pull a weapon first before they try to have a conversation. I'm talking about typical law-abiding people who are used to just living their life, trying to raise their family and go about their business. But when you don't know, and it looks like there's no control over these folks or other people that are out of control, that engage in willful criminal behavior, what do you do? It takes the police too long to get there. By that time, you'll be gone. What do you do? The question is, whom should I fear? I would submit to you again that when you first place your trust in the Almighty and you have wisdom in Him and in guidance, that can help manage any concern about anything outside of yourself and your relationship with the Almighty. The more real the threat is for an individual, whether it's real or perceived, the more heroic people feel like I need to act. I got to do something to save myself. I got to do something to save my family. I got to do something to save other people around me. And we see this oftentimes in vigilante-type behavior, where individuals feel as though it is their appointed duty to keep the whole neighborhood or community safe. And what do they do? What they do? We've seen this with George Zimmerman and others. You act in a way that caused more problems than any good. But, beloved, if we can be focused as a society, as a nation, mainly people, and understand that the greatest fear that any of us should have is not just being intimidated, but having a reverence for righteousness and truth for the Creator that made us, I think we'd go a long way to do some things. And our young people can understand that ain't no gun or any other type of weapon going to save your behind. Let's watch this. As soon as you snooze, you know the rest. You lose. This fella here, Bone Crusher, this might help you understand a little bit the mindset and the mentality that is promoted and prompted through certain forms of media such as the rap and what have you. Songs of this nature oftentimes serves as the courage builder for many people who are really afraid. 657-383-0944. Listen to Talk Straight. This your host, Reverend Doctor. Give us a call. You're listening to Talk Street. This is your host. Phone's on somewhere, man. Ain't nobody scared of you. Well, you ain't scared of nobody. We'll go straight to the phone lines. 3651, I believe that's out of the Windy City. Welcome to Talk Street tonight. Can you hear me?
Thank you, sir, for having me. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Always, always. You ain't scared, is you?
Of what? Only thing to fear is fear itself.
Watch it now. That sounds like Roosevelt right there. That sounds like Roosevelt. Well, thank you, Minister, for joining us tonight. We hope to focus a little bit on some of what we're seeing across the nation, right? Where you have an emboldened mentality that says that even though I don't have what I believe I deserve, right? And everybody else is apparently living life with their I can't get mine. I'm going to scare folks into giving me what I want. Huh?
Okay.
Listen, you make us mad. Don't make us mad or we'll come out and we'll set some stuff up. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
And now what's happening,
okay.
I'm going to give you the floor, but what's happening is in many cities, district attorneys are not prosecuting many of the behaviors that are considered to be criminal. And so people feel like, hey, I can get away with it now. My boo game has become legal. Let me be quiet. Let me hear something. What do you say?
I think you hit the nail on the head. You were talking about anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And anxiety is a fear or a feeling or emotion,
okay,
that one can't control. It's,
right,
it's a perceived emotion.
Right.
And a lot of times that emotion could be wrong. It could be. And
right,
what was interesting about that you were saying, I've been to quite a few trainings. And what I find interesting about the trainings is that every instructor asked a question. And the question was, what do people fear the most? And the answer was, people fear change. Mm.
Mm.
People fear change the most. And I believe that's what anxiety is coming from. Unfortunately, we got a false sense of change. Things are changing, don't get me wrong.
But
they may not be changing for the benefit of what people believe it is. Some of those who feel like they can take some from you or scare you into, you know, making you feel like you owe me something. Because a lot of people don't feel like that. I don't feel like that.
Right.
I personally don't feel like that. I lived in a situation where things were, in my opinion, quite dire. And I've learned to navigate through those things. And that helped me to keep my anxiety in check.
Right. Would you agree, and we got Jacksonville, Florida, John. I'll be right with you, Jacksonville. Would you agree then that it's one thing to be challenged by change, right, or an unknown situation, but it's a different thing than how you respond to us. You see, does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And the reason, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Your response can be your lifesaver or your detriment.
Wow. Okay.
Because the simple fact that what you may perceive to be a threat, people who consider themselves to be reasonable and normal may not perceive that to be a threat.
Now you got bigger problems. Yes. Interesting.
Now you have bigger problems.
Right. Okay.
And what I find interesting, go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish, and then I'm going to bring 3072 in. Go ahead and finish.
What I find interesting is that now I think times are going to be a little more strenuous now with the idea of this, is it a moratorium that's going to be over with in September?
I heard, yeah. Yes.
That's going to cause quite a bit of anxiety because a lot of people haven't paid their rent because of the idea of, it's COVID and, you know, I don't need to pay right now.
Mm-hmm.
But now people got to pay. That's going to cause quite a bit of anxiety. So I'll yield to that. That's a whole other topic.
Okay. All right. Well, it's okay. 3072, welcome. We're talking from the topic. And whom should I? Should you get scared of anybody? 3072.
You're speaking. Hello, everybody. You're speaking from the topic of what now?
In whom should I fear? Personalize that to yourself.
Okay. Well, other than God Almighty, I don't think fearing anybody would help anything.
What if I got a broom?
And it should not become a daily practice nor habit.
Interesting. Okay. A brother out of Chicago, 3661, was just explaining, I thought quite well, what really leads up to a lot of tense and uncertain or volatile situations. And a lot of times it's people's perception that things are worse than what they really are, such that they have to react in a way immediately or spontaneously. He beautifully brought out the fact that change oftentimes leads to fear when people don't know what to expect, you know. And if you will, let me just speak to this. One of the things that the COVID restrictions and things that started a year ago did was to abruptly, immediately change people's lives to where the things that they were accustomed to doing for them, so forth and so on. Some people worked hard and they didn't want to go to work, but they knew they had to pay their rent, to pay their car notes, you understand, to feed themselves. But an excuse was given to them to lay back, and somebody's going to take care of you because it's not your fault. What do you think about that, 17?
Well, I think you snooze, you lose, and you fall prey to those games, and you find yourself with your A out, you know. Again, I experienced some tough times, too, during the beginning of COVID. And, right, I had a choice to make, you know. Either I can keep struggling and try to keep things afloat, or I could just fall back and just go with what everybody else is doing. But that wouldn't have helped me, because what people don't get or realize, the person was mentioning the moratorium. Right, that only means that right now you didn't have to pay. But when it's over, all of that bill is coming due, like then. So you just set yourself in an even deeper hole, you know, not to do anything just because I have an excuse.
Right.
But so, and I feel really bad. It's going to be a rude awakening, you know, for a lot of people. And, that's going to cause stress on the rest of everybody else that was, you know, trying to do what they should be doing.
Correct. I've seen a few pass by a few streets where it appeared as though people being set up, you know. So let me ask you all this one there. And I've known some good people who lost their jobs and what have you, and they found themselves sleeping in essentially homeless. So now, and I can understand why at that moment it's hard for them to focus on what's in front of them, you know? And they probably ask themselves, how am I going to eat tonight? You know what I mean? Even though I got this car, will I be able to put gas in it and go anywhere? Heaven forbid that anything breaks down. Right? How do you, any idea, we're talking here and we are really talking about, wait, and I like what you said, 72, that really where we should all place our trust, our confidence, our reverence in any fear is in the Almighty. There are some people who are more afraid of coming out of the health professionals' mouths and agencies than they were of what the Creator, that they say profess and love, had to say. So what do you think about that, 72?
Well, yeah, and I think that's not good. I mean, I'll be afraid when you can part the Red Sea, when you can tell the wind to be still and it obeys. When you make the sun rise and set, then I'm scared of you. I mean, other than that, hey, all you could do is what you could do, and that's what somebody else tell you to do, just like me. So, but yeah, they don't need to, you need to be proactive in your own life. Like me, I knew trying to use that as a scapegoat, well, I ain't got to pay for 3 months. Right, that's not smart because I'm already struggling. So why would I put myself further behind in 3 months? Now I'm going to have to come up with double this amount. So yeah, we got to just think logically and stop putting things, your business, in other people's hands.
Wow. I begin the monologue by saying that it's very dangerous to place a weapon, and I don't necessarily mean a physical weapon. Emotionally, when you tell people who are easily persuaded to take risks and be irresponsible, as you're describing, then, 61, when you empower them to do that, you really set them up for inevitability. That when the truth comes, they won't be, you know, because they're not prepared. They've been encouraged to maintain the irresponsible mentality. I look at the way a lot of young people on social media and what have you responded to certain year or so ago. And I don't think really they understood, but the idea that, hey, there are some bad things and some bad people, and that justifies me looting when an opportunity presents itself for a store to get broken into. I see in California right now, there's some unwritten rule or something where as long as you don't steal over $1,000, you don't go to jail. I mean, it literally had people running, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And what do you think about that, 61?
I think about the Old Testament when I think about that. Moses was a fella who had conversations with the mighty God.
Okay.
Moses is trying to get these folks, these Israel people, to follow his commandments.
Okay.
To the point that they believed them, they didn't believe them, they believed them. As long as it was going their way, it was all right.
Okay.
Then it went deeper in the Old Testament. They started talking about kings in the books of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted somebody else to be responsible for their actions.
Interesting. Wow.
And what I learned about our folks or people in general, let me say that. Yeah, I want to be politically correct. People in general. Unfortunately, we have learned to not be accountable for our actions. We always want somebody else to take the blame for our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, that has come back to bite us, man, unfortunately. Because it's about to get rough. It's about to get rough out here. We'll see.
Yes, sir. Well, no, and all the celebrities that are encouraging you to go out and protest and to cause a ruckus, they're not going to pay your mortgage for you or pay your rent for you, are they? Or your car.
No, they're not there to clear the moratorium. The governors, and they saying they got a little money for that. But, again, there's quite a few people that's our owners of property. It's a mess, man. It's a mess.
It is. I
was talking to a gentleman. He sounded a little. Some people would think he was unstable, but I think he was hitting on something. This brother was of the more divine movement.
Okay.
And he was suggesting that it's going to be something like apocalypse. And I, you know, I was wondering where he got his information from, but from what I noticed in the streets of just driving, I just come back from Mississippi. Even there's a certain spirit out here that is quite interesting, sir. It is a very aggressive. It's a very angry. It's a very unsettled and an anxiety-filled spirit that I feel like, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's true. I think you're absolutely right.
Which is interesting.
Well, then, if I'm the pastor, you all help me understand. How do you bring someone back into the realms of reality and help soothe that? I realize that may not happen overnight. What do you all think about this? Because, you know, some good people out there who are in this situation you all are describing, right? And the reality is they do something, right? But because for a long time, guys, y'all correct me if I'm wrong, but for a long time we've leaned heavily on our faith in the church and God to help us manage to deal with those things.
That's out the door, sir.
Say that again?
That's out the door. I'm sorry to cut you off. That's out the door. Anytime somebody can tell you when to praise your God because of a pandemic or whatever, that kills that notion.
I see.
In my opinion.
Okay. Let me jump in here. So would you agree that there's a possibility now, even those people who lean there saying, well, dang, not even that held up. And so I don't know who to trust now. You understand? I don't know who to have fear in, who to have confidence in.
We were talking about anxiety.
That's
some anxiety for you.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Because
if
God can't help me. If God can't
Wait a minute now. Wait a minute, sir. You're going to take me back to my text now. Proverbs 9 and 10 says, the fear of Jehovah, the fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom.
Oh, okay.
Now, let's bring it home now. Huh?
Well, okay.
See, but I take your point, and I think that's what 72 is saying, too. Yes, that is whenever you lose that thinking for yourself, that knowledge, then look at what the text says, 72, in this part of it. It did say in the beginning of it, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of it. And the knowledge, watch that, put a pin right there, the knowledge of the holy is understanding. In other words, the information that you have that equips you or prepares you to make good, sound, rational decisions, choices, right, is understanding. Would you agree that there are a lot of people who are acting, are responding impulsively without a real understanding? 72?
Absolutely. We still doing it now. Look at old Poe Jesse Jackson, man. They had him in New York getting arrested. Are you serious?
Hold on, 61. Hold tight. Let me go to 72 for a second, and then I'll come back to you. what say you there, 72?
Can you repeat the question again?
I was talking. Did you hear what 61 just said about the fear and what have you? Did you hear any of that conversation? All right.
Yes,
so I was making reference to that. And in the text in Proverbs 9 and 10 that we led with in the monologue, the writer says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And it goes on further to say the knowledge of the holy is understanding. The information that you use to make good, sound choices before you move and act is understanding. I was asking you to respond to that. What can we do to inspire folk who are volatile right now in that regard?
Well, again, we can remind them of the scriptures, and not just the scriptures, but looking around them every day.
Okay.
I mean, every day that is applicable in my life, each step, each move I make, and everything that I do. There are so many things that are out of my hands and out of my control. But I know who do have control. And, hey, who going to always tell me, yeah, as long as I'm doing well? I mean, when people think about God, the scriptures and all, they think all these things should just be added unto you and you don't have to do anything. Well, God is fair and just as I know him. And, right, he will come to your rescue when you call and bless you, but it's not for you to keep just be making irrational, irresponsible you know, you cook, cook. I got Jesus. Okay. Do you have Jesus? I mean, right. Let's not abuse privilege. That's what I think the main problem is. So I would just remind people to be a good steward of the blessings that God bestow upon us.
Okay. 51 was starting to say something. What were you saying at 51 in reference to that?
What I was saying is that anytime a group of people, if you look at the history of the United States of America, you got slavery, you got civil rights. Then you have those who are supposed to be civil rights leaders. And those are the people that's encouraging the good trouble, if you will, quote unquote, right? But the good trouble is what's killing us, right? We have Jesse Jackson, as old as he is, getting arrested in New York City about people not paying their rent.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
What is that saying to people exactly? How is that helping their situation?
I see. But now
we are being duped, and we continue to be allowing other people to continue to dupe us. You know.
I got you. So because his name is well known, he's a national figure. What I'm hearing you say is that might give some people the impression that it's okay for them to bust the system and say, I'm not leaving, even though I haven't met my obligation and my agreement to pay my rent. Because it wasn't my
absolutely
fault.
If Jesse Jackson is shaking, about to be in handcuffs, not shaking because he's scared, shaking because his body is old and wilted.
Did he say speak at all about what he was hoping to accomplish while he was
He couldn't speak. They were putting him in handcuffs. He was about to go to jail. He didn't say anything at all. It was just a mere picture.
You're saying. But I'm asking, I assume he was with a group of people that were in protest, right?
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And did anyone articulate a goal, an objective for their being there in that protest? And I know we haven't seen a lot of that because
the objective was just to let Congress extend the moratorium. Some people probably was out there, and even though that was the goal, I've learned several times with people protesting, some people don't even know what they're out there protesting for, sir.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They out there.
So what were they protesting?
Everybody else out here.
What were
they
protesting?
They were protesting. Jesse Jackson, they were out there protesting the extension of the government to not kick these people out come September, I think, 3rd.
Okay. So that was a reasonable protest, I think. I mean.
Well, what would have been reasonable if you paid your rent on time when you was able to?
Correct.
Maybe with that being said, maybe some people weren't able to.
I'm not sure. I don't know nobody's situation. But what I'm saying is, if I'm a property owner and I have to pay a mortgage, and I have you as a renter, and you're getting unemployment or some kind of it, you need to be paying some.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Because there was plenty of money out here. Yeah.
Well, let me step in for a second. To that point, you made an excellent point that as a property owner that rents or leases your property, right, unless you're seeing where your investment or your resources are coming in, yes, it's sad that your tenant has to go or they're in that situation. But where
that's
do you how do you
How do you get paid?
That's how I eat. That's the only way that
Here's the thing.
Okay, cool.
Now, right. What should have been done, in my opinion, and homelessness is a very serious issue, and
yes,
I am in the highest agreement that we don't need to just start turning families out into the street. We got enough homelessness going on now. But with that being said, with all the money that's been spent and sent out, you know, I don't understand, since the government is so involved, why they didn't get involved with making sure that, like you said, the homeowners or the building owners or whoever was paid until this thing was over. That would have been,
about,
and they could have paid them directly.
How about you can't govern behavior?
Yeah, so, but as far as that, I get it. Yeah, they got to eat too, but at the same time, some of these landlords, and I, again, before I bought my place and when I was struggling, half of them didn't want to hear, oh, I can give you something.
Well,
it was, well,
I mean,
you just wait until you can pay all of it. And then what do? You decide, do I want to eat or do I want to just go on and give them the little $600 I brought home, when maybe I usually bring in $1,200 or $1,300. Do I want to keep the lights on, or do you know, that's a tough decision to make. But I know
I want to buy
there are some people out there that could have paid their stuff, and they just want to play games too. So it just depends.
Yeah. Well, I think you're right. I agree with you that at the end of the day, there are going to be some people who get caught up in the catch, right? Both the property owner as well as the renters and what have you. And that's never easy. That's never easy. But let me ask you this. If it came down to it, guys, to people actually being put out, I think if the property owner were to go to court to make my livelihood and the family, and while I couldn't control COVID and they couldn't either, I have to have some sort of relief as well. I want to believe that from a constitutional point, they might win that, right? So that then the next question becomes, who helps and how do those people help those who are displaced, who are put out? And I'm just curious, you have, let's look at it, that in a lot of cities, you have a number of churches, a lot of real estate that can be used to house people.
Good luck. Good luck.
Yo. Why are you laughing, 61? And you said good luck, 72. What?
And I ain't going to call the church name, but I wonder if that big church on Murfreesboro Road going to open up doors to put some people in there to sleep. Good luck.
I got it.
Well, somebody might argue that is unfair to even suggest that.
Why?
But now, let's
it's
go.
It's shelter.
Well,
they got running water, air.
Right,
and
they've been paying
tithes and offerings, so it'd be meat in the store.
Well, they may not be members of the church. They may not be that
no,
might
no.
be.
Well, that's all right. You well, got a bunch out for them too. So to say, the scripture.
Let me explain why I posed that question, and that is because for a long time, I have been speaking on this, and that being the breakdown in many neighborhoods and communities between not only our faith institutions, but another, as well as those who represent us in government. So one of the things I would have been seeing, 72, is elected officials on the local level, talking about the state and the local council level, start to have conversation with people at the beginning about some ways that you can prepare yourself. You know what I mean? If you got a penny, you have to make that choice then. Am I going to make sure I keep a roof open, or am I going to enjoy myself by it? You understand what I'm saying? And I don't want to try to speak because we don't know everybody's situation.
And yeah.
So I don't want to paint everybody.
But and I think, like we were saying, the bottom line is they know their situation.
That's
so
right.
if I,
That's
as a friend,
right.
can talk to you about
right.
your situation that you know best, I'm going to advise you, hey, you don't need to be asleep or sitting down. Because
right.
at the end of the day, if you fall down, I'm too busy trying to keep from falling, and I haven't sat down. I don't think I'm be able to help you. So you need to try to stay in a position, you know, to where you can kind of help yourself some.
Right.
But, yeah, I
so
wouldn't recommend when you hear people laughing and joking about how, shoot, I ain't going back to work, I, you know, and all that other mess, I would not encourage that.
That's what I was going to get to. That it, and some people are angry that certain states are rescinding their monies for unemployment, right? They're angry with them. They're saying that's not fair. Well, again, this was not intended to be something that's permanent in the first place, right?
Yeah.
And if there is a job opportunity for you to take, for you to work, and you to earn resources to fund your quality of life, why wouldn't you do that? Yes, it may be you may have gotten more unemployment than you did working. But the idea is that what you need is to keep stability, right? And as long as you have a position that's profiting or providing for you, you have stability and not leaning and waiting and taking the chance or the gamble that the government is going to bail you out 100%. And I wonder if why preachers and politicians and folk like that weren't busy getting in people's faces and in their ears and talking to them. Maybe they go down again.
Because it was more profitable to keep people conditioned to be okay with that. That's why. They had several programs out here where people didn't have to do anything at all. It's almost like the public aid system.
Well, that's essentially what was created, was a systematic dependency, a spontaneous systematic dependency. And, again, that goes back to my point. That's the weapon right there. That mind that was childish, that was not able to process what we're saying and say, you know what, even if I take advantage, I'm not suggesting that people shouldn't or they should not have taken advantage of those opportunities. I'm not suggesting that at all. But as you were saying, 72, responsibly you stand to yourself, I'm going to pretend like this is not going to last long enough.
It's not.
Right?
Yeah, it ain't.
So operate from that thought that this ain't going to last, I'm not going to get too happy with this. I'm not going to be too satisfied, and I'm not going to let too many things go that I had in place already.
That's right.
Because I knew then I had to, you know what I mean?
Might I say, I was the first, I worked medical. So if anybody was stressed out and scared and putting their life in danger every day, it's those kind of people. Right. So I get the whole fear thing and all that, but I still had to keep moving because guess what? I couldn't let me go under a bridge. What do I want? Okay, if I'm going to die, at least I can die comfortable at home or something, not in the street just sprawled out somewhere.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know, and you're right. I'm not telling anybody not to take advantage of help, but again, you know your situation, and you know exactly how much help you need.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it's up to you. If you get caught with your pants down, I hate to say that, at the end of the day, because you put yourself in a predicament like that.
Yeah. Well, now, let me just say that you're listening to Talk Straight. We're talking from the topic, in whom should I fear? In whom should I fear? And we've been having some discussions about some of the circumstances that led people to become fearful about tomorrow, what's wrong. And further, we've been discussing as to how it triggers certain responses to their fear, right? And even to the point where some feel as though, because I say I'm afraid about my condition, I'm justified in engaging in criminal-type behavior or destructive-type behavior that's going to cause somebody else to be punished or to lose. just so I can feel good, right? That's what we're really talking about. 657-383-0-4. Do give us a call. Post your questions and comments on Facebook, and I'll respond in kind. I wanted to go back to something you were saying there, 72. The text in the 8th verse of the 9th chapter of Proverbs says, "Reprove not the smart, rebuke a wise man, and he will love you." Let me stop right there. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Why would somebody love you after you rebuke you? Under what circumstance? Anybody? Anybody?
Yeah, because if...
Did you say, if I heard you correctly, you said, what circumstance would a wise man not want to be rebuked?
Would anybody want to love you after you have rebuked them?
They should, but I don't think so. They
say
should.
That again? You said
they
should?
They should, but I doubt it.
Okay, well, let me hear from 72. 72, under what circumstances would somebody love you after you have rebuked them? Especially a grown person. I'm grown. Talk to me like that.
If you are rebuking me in a constructive way, of course I'm going to love you after I've grown and matured some to see how, hey, that was helpful for you to tell me, no, you were wrong, and you need to
right.
go that way and not that way.
I'm so
I can't do
that.
Nothing but appreciate that. And guess what? If we friends and you going that way, that's not the right way and it's the wrong way, I'm just not going to fool with you. I'm not even going to follow you. I'm not going to give you a ride. I ain't going to do nothing because I don't want to see you hurt.
Now,
so I just got to let that go.
I'm going to go back to what 61 was just saying. If you are popular like our friend Jesse Jackson, perhaps what you should be doing is not being in front of the camera, going in the police car, but you should be quietly bringing people together, letting them know, listen, some of your behaviors are counterproductive, and you must stop. You must stop, because you're causing problems that have to be paid for resolution, and you already don't have enough right here. Taxpayers in New York, a lot of people are leaving places like New York and droves. Why? Because the burden of a government becomes so strong to pay for what? Situations and circumstances that arguably are avoidable. If you allow people, let's look at the summer. How many businesses in New York were looted and tore up and burned, and other cities as well? Well, who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for that? You understand what I'm saying? Especially when it's the government facility. The taxpayer pays for that. Somebody should be talking to our people about being sensible, about being wise, about being responsible. And when we say rebuke, that's what we're talking about. Stop. Do not go and engage in that behavior. I know you say you're there for a call and you want to protest. Is there something else you can be doing with your time and whatever resources you use to get there? Because obviously if you're out there doing what you're doing, you're not working and not being productive for yourself in any other kind of way.
Well,
you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm all for a protest that's worth a worthy cause. I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with protesting. But again, how are you protesting? Are you wanting to tear some stuff up? Are you wanting to loot? Are you wanting to burn? Are you wanting to go to, you know, not that kind of protest, but there's nothing wrong with a group of people, I don't think, gathering under the right conditions for the right reasons to try to go about making a change.
No, let me
I would say this.
Go ahead.
I would say this. Jesse Jackson has lived his life.
He sure has. That's right.
And he about got all he gonna get to him. He got it already. If you're gonna exercise any of your energy, calling yourself a spokesman for the people, that energy should be spent more wisely than just you getting some handcuffs or a photo op.
Correct. Because I agree with that.
Because there's something wrong with that protest right there.
Oh, I didn't. I wasn't disputing that. Yeah, I was just disputing
I'm not saying that you. I'm not suggesting that you are. I'm just talking about how we as people go for the underlay for the overplay.
Right.
We got a bunch of idiots out here running around talking about they protesting and doing this and doing that, and they recognize in their lives that they straight. But the people you making this noise for, they're the people going to get the brunt of all that's coming down. Jesse Jackson ain't going to have to worry about getting kicked out on the 3rd of September.
Right. He good.
Half of these people that was out there with him probably is not going to have to worry about that.
Well, may I use myself
that's what's
as
shameful.
An example? 61.
Huh?
I hear what you're saying. This one, I hear what you're saying loud and clear. Let me use myself as an example here. And, you know, my dad and I had this conversation. Y'all might remember the Million Man March back in 95, right? I was young and I had a brand new family to tend to take care of, right? And I needed to have my tail at work. In fact, I had to go to training. And the decision was made when they were organizing and what have you. My dad said, "You're not going to go." I said, "Well," and I know a lot of people that went, you know. And I was happy that they went, and it looked good and everything. I said, "Well, no, I can't go because if I go, I'm going to lose my job. And right now I got a family to take care of." And what I reasoned with, guys, is that I was not invited to the table for the organizing of the march. So some questions weren't answered for me. What's going to happen 5 years after this? What's going to change from that? And it was only a handful of people that really benefited from the direct resources that came from the march. But a lot, I know of
well, that's, four or five that's absolutely true. If I went to the march, I haven't received anything.
What? You didn't get nothing?
None at all.
No, I was going to say that I knew personally at least four or five guys who did. They made the sacrifice to go. And when they came back, they lost their job. And some of them were, I was working a government job. Some of them were good jobs, and they found themselves filling the post business, you know. And they got, you know, most of them got back on their feet, but it disrupted the quality of life for them and their family. So back to your point, 72, the question is, when you look at things, is this in my best interest? There's three steps to wisely making a choice or acting. When the situation hits you, you think about it, right? And then you ask yourself, okay, what are the pros and cons? Right? What are the good and the bad? The positive and the negative? And then you act. Then you make a rational decision. But some folks, situation hit them, a thought hit them, they jump right in head first. They ain't even thought about none. You understand what I'm saying? And I think that's the same thing with the protest. Who is it that's causing this, and really, how is this protest related to me? Does that make sense to you? Maybe it is. Come on, somebody, get back.
Well, everybody can't get it. That's what they told me. You know, it's the bigger picture is it's fun. For everybody, but everybody ain't got it still. Man.
So we sacrifice you for everybody else. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, somebody got to be sacrificed with it.
Okay, are you willing to be the sacrificial lamb here?
I was good, man. The truth of the matter is, my employer, I rode with him to the Million Man March.
Okay.
So that worked for me.
Right.
I did recognize that several people, it didn't work for them. I do recognize that.
And I think it's perfectly fine to say, you go ahead if you're good. If it's not going to adversely affect you, then go ahead. I'm going to stay here and take care of my business. That's kind of where we are now. Where we are now. Where some people want you to drop everything, come run with it, and let's go raise some cane. But you got business to take care of. And it's not wise for you to
disregard your business that you take care of today. In this case, whatever money I have, whatever resources I have, paying as much as I can on my bills. Because even with that, I've established a good faith effort with my debtors that at least I'm trying. Mm-hmm. But I ain't paying nothing, and I still expect to get the same. Come on, man.
I wouldn't recommend anybody to do that. Let me put that out there.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Good people now, I'm just saying. And I think the most powerful point from here is that if you are someone of influence, if you are in a position to have people's ear with your voice, make sure that that is substantive information and example that you leave. You know, I know that Dr. King got arrested, but sometimes I wonder what is the practicality in 2020 for me going to get arrested. And the same people I get arrested for are still going to do their thing when I, after I, you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
How much change do you trust from that? What good is that going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So we got Pastor Waller joining us. Pastor, we got a few more minutes here until, look like we dropped him there. Look like we dropped him there. But maybe he'll call back. But so one other thing that I wanted to point, we got a few more minutes. We have an early show tonight at 1:30. We'll cut off. We got about another 15 minutes or so. I appreciate you calling, and we've been talking from in whom should I fear? There's some people don't fear anybody because they're irrational. Well, they'll say they don't fear anybody because they're irrational, and that was the point that I wanted to make. This macho, bold, bravado image is what is projected to scare folks. But what it is a false sense of security, false image of courage. Because when you take away from them the weapon of the crowd or the weapon of the gun or some sort of object, they can't maintain themselves. They'll fold, they'll crack, right? What we got to tell young people is your greatest weapon is your mind. Let me say that one more time. Your greatest weapon is your mind. And when you learn to use your mind in every and any situation, you can come out of anything when you use your mind. That's kind of what the text is talking about in the 8th and the 9th verse of Proverbs, that by getting instruction, you become wise. You understand what I'm saying? You make wise choices, decisions. You don't let the crowd control your thoughts. You control your thoughts. Because when the crowd is gone, guess who's going to be left there to deal with you? You are. The writer says that the beginning of wisdom, fear of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom. And that's the point that I like there. That's who you should be scared of. No gun or no crowd and all those things are going to Molotov cocktails. They ain't going to save you. One of the things I've learned growing up in the streets of Chicago is that you may take off a few, but they'll bring the whole National Guard after your behind if they want to. Then where you going to run? You ain't going nowhere. Pastor Waller, we got a few more minutes here, sir. Welcome tonight. I know you're out busy. We're going to have a short show tonight. Just say hello to her. 3072 is on. I know she loves to hear from you. Now, good brother.
Yeah.
Hey, it's now 3072. How y'all doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I'm all right. Thank you for Pastor Doctor allowing me to say hello, man. I've been doing some work here. I've been doing a lot of work, man. That's what I've been doing. And I just thought I'd take a moment out to dial the digits. And I'm glad because
we appreciate
it. It's good to hear you going in. I heard the scripture, you know, being read. So I know you're on the right road.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
So, we were talking about this false sense of security that's given by putting on the front, like you got it together, and usually people use some cloak to cover themselves, and that's behind a large group of people in the crowd or some sort of weapon. And particularly young cats on the street feel like their gun is going to save them. Well, you got to sleep sometimes. And you don't have eyes in the back of your head. So when you snooze, you lose. You understand, Pastor?
Oh yeah.
How useful is it? Just right quickly, I just want you to weigh on it. How useful is it for us to use any influence we have as a preacher, as a teacher, as a politician, or anything to encourage folks to not be aggressive and leashing out, but to be wise and act prudently?
I would say, Pastor Doctor, when you were talking about, you know, the people in the crowd versus when the crowd is going their separate ways, and who you're going to have to deal with is you. And
that's right.
A lot of times the crowd, some people just want to fit in and be a part of the in crowd.
Yeah.
And so that actually happened. And the scripture says that if a man pretended to be something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. So if I'm not that the crowd is, then I'm deceiving myself pretending to be that, if that makes sense. And, you know, and a lot of that is going on because it's hard to get around the crowd when the crowd is there because it's something that's noticeable. It's like, I acknowledge that that's a crowd over there. It looks like they got it going on. And then I venture over into the crowd and I find out later that the crowd is going in the wrong direction.
What?
And that happens too, brother. I thought I'd let you know that. I got with the crowd once upon a time myself. And it's called the world's way. That was a crowd,
wow,
brother. And and believe me, it happens really quick. 37-2, I'm so glad I got away from the crowd because I got a chance to find myself. And and it's just a good thing to hear that when Pastor Doctor said that, you know, about once that's done, you're going to have to be in contact with yourself. And that's meaningful. I'm glad you brought that up. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to, I agree with you. I'm sorry to cut you off. I agree with you, man, because that's where our young people are now. They're good as long as they can show out in front of everybody, but when you have to face your reality by yourself, you can't handle it. You, all of a sudden, you revert back to a little three-year-old, shrugging your shoulders, and you don't know nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when you're out there with the crowd, you big, bad, and, oh, man, you can do it then, but.
Oh, that's it, man.
No, I was just in agreement with what you're saying. And again, that's another teachable moment for you when you have somebody's personal time and ear. You know,
right.
Encourage them to follow themselves. Well, after God, but follow themselves, their own thoughts. Think about you. Get yourself straight first.
Yeah.
Because you're right. When the crowd is gone, or even when they ain't gone, all you got to do is need something. Hell, ask them for something. Ask some of the crowd for something. See what you get.
Right.
It's possible to be in a room of 1,000 people and still be very alone. Is that what
That's
I'm saying?
Right.
Still ain't got no. I think about the woman with the issue of blood. Say the Savior is walking through a multitude of people, man, and all these folks. And just one woman touch him, and decide to say, "What you mean, man?" So all kind of people might say, No. Somebody touch me. You understand what I'm saying?
Somebody touch me.
I ain't talking about all these people, a whole lot of, but somebody touch me. I ain't gonna wait, but I felt the help. Somebody touch me, man. And he felt the fact that even though she was in this crowd individually, she had to meet. And that's what we got to tell our young folks. Look, next time you think you're going to jump up and you want to go out and you want to march, you want to protest, ask yourself at the end of the day, how is that going to change my personal situation? Because if it ain't, you probably need to be somewhere thinking about how to fix your business. That's me talking. That's Doctor talking now. You know what I mean? Go somewhere.
That's funny that you're talking about this stuff. Today I saw, I don't know if they were homeless or not, but a family sitting out there with the sign, you know, that they were hungry. They had two kids out there. First it was hot out here, and then it started raining. I was getting upset, you know. I'm, like, really sensitive to seeing that kind of stuff. So I'm like, okay, what do I do? Okay, you give them money for food, and they'll probably just go buy drugs, and the kids won't eat. And, you know, you're going through all these debates. So what I realized was, you know, never mind blaming the parents or whatever. Whatever you can do, if you can do anything, just do it and go on. I mean, the rest is left up to God.
Was there a male out there?
Oh, yeah. It was a man and a lady and two girls.
Okay. I think I would have encouraged that brother. Look here, man. You go and hustle and you tell somebody I need to wash the windows for you. Let me take the trash out. Let me do something so I can earn a dime because I got these children right here.
Yeah, it really upset me, though, to see them babies sitting there in that nasty grass, you know, and rain. Oh, God.
Ain't that something? Yeah, they're playing that kind of game, 3072. They involve the kids in that now.
Right.
Right. You know. That was not fair. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's a dirty game.
Yeah. That wasn't fair. You want to put the family out front because you know more people will feel, which I was feeling bad. Tears actually was forming in my eyes, but, you know, yeah, that was not fair.
Yeah, you said it, Bob, that it was heartfelt, you know, just to see it going on. And but to misuse the babies like that, those kids, you understand, is a sad case. And that's just
that brother could have.
I think it's terrible for people not to consider when you have kids, whatever your lifestyle is that you choose before they come, that's fine if you want to be a nomad mom. But when you dragging them around and they ain't done nothing to nobody, they didn't ask, you know, that's not right.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Well, at the end of the day, there are things that can be done. Again, we don't know everybody's situation, but reason tells us that day labor, he could have made at least $30 to $50 a day doing day labor. You understand what I'm saying? And if you're going to go walk anywhere, walk there. And that's money that you can feed your family with. Now, I'm just saying, it's more you can do than stand around waiting on the chance you're going to pull at somebody's emotions and their hearts. But anyway, and see, that's helpful. That's what we mean by rebuke. The text says, rebuke a wise man, and he'll see a benefit. Wise man will realize, okay, you're trying to help. You're trying to really help. But our time is getting away from us here. Let's go around Robin before Pastor Wallow will give you the floor. 61, thank you so much for joining us, sir. We appreciate the great information that you share with us. Final thoughts for us tonight?
Be careful out there, man.
Don't take no witness. They don't see
it. Don't take no witness. Be careful.
All right. Well, we appreciate you joining us. What about a
72? Just continue to, you know, do the best you can and stealing people's time, attention in their ear, one by one, one at a time. Make a difference.
Sure. Okay. Well, and we'll be back Thursday night. We're going to do an open mic test Thursday night, but we had a few pretty interesting topics that I think we want to give people an opportunity to expound on in their own way. So, Pastor Wallace, go ahead and take it home for tonight, sir. You've been listening to Talk Straight. Our topic tonight was, in whom should I fear? The answer, the beginning of wisdom, is the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All right, Pastor, go ahead.
Yeah. All right, man. That's a form of respect right there, Pastor Doc. I'm just truly grateful to have tuned in and got what I was able to receive, because a little bit go a long way. We thank all the callers, for everybody who was able to tune in and for those that was just listening. It is powerful when you make known about that wisdom that you're talking about. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And that's the type of wisdom that I desire more and more each day. To fear God means to respect him, and then there's an order that comes from that. The learning, So how it says in Matthew chapter number 11 and verse 29, it says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. And that's what the fear of the Lord means to me. Amen. I yield back to you on that note.
Wow. Wow. Great point there. We appreciate that. And the mighty clouds of joy said it best when it said, order my steps in your word, dear Lord. And lead me and guide me.
God, good things all the time.